Okay, good.
Wow, you know what? That is very, very loud compared to you. Are you on your
Really?
speakerphone?
No, I'm not. Let me put
I
on.
can hear you fine, but
Oh.
now that I compare it to something else, you're very, very soft.
Really? Let me try the speakerphone.
Okay.
That better?
Yes, much better.
Much better? Okay.
Much
I'll do
better.
that. This is PLC session number 43, and this is the fourth series of our professional learning communities. Professional learning communities are groups of small groups of people that are interested in common ideas. In our case, it has to do with environmental job training. And during each series, we address different issues. When there is going to be an RFP for EPA funding of brownfields job training programs, we talk about the grant and about preparing a proper grant and setting up a job training program.
Hi, did someone just
Hi.
join us?
Yes, Glow. This is Harry in Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Mike and I were just wondering if anyone was going to remember that we had to change the day this week.
Oh, no. Am I the only one
So
so far?
far, yeah.
Well, we'll probably be joined
Oh,
by others. And also,
no.
what we do with these is we do post-session notes and we send them out to about 50 people. And also put the recording up on our website so that people who missed can tune in and listen to the conversation. So,
Yeah, that's a nice feature.
what I was explaining was that this is the fourth series that we've had, and each series we approach it a little bit different. Some when we're in between EPA cycles of grant reviews and grant submissions, we talk about how to start up a program, about funding sources, about all of the particulars of setting up a job training program. As we get closer to the RFP announcement, we start to talk specifically about setting your program up and getting ready for the RFP announcement. And when the announcements are made, and as we approach the deadlines, we speak very specifically to the writing of the EPA grant. But in between, it gives us a chance to talk about setting up our program for the next go around and getting a program started in your community. So,
What are your oh, I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead.
go ahead.
What are your thoughts regarding the possibility of even having a next go around?
I think they're pretty good at this point. The things that concern me are the funding for the community development corporations. There is a big push to cut out funding for community development corporations, and of course, most brownfields and many of the programs in cities are based on community development corporations, which the mayors support very heavily, but they've tried to cut out for the last several years. We don't see at this point any indication of clear cuts in this program. Someone just joined.
Hello, this is Joe. Joe, you live with the Florida Brownfields Association.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Bean.
Hey, Jacqueline.
And Gail Johnson.
Okay, Adele, good. We're talking about funding. Let's start off with just a quick update from GLOW regarding the status of the go-rounds that were due this spring. And GLOW, what's the latest that you've heard from EPA?
Actually, I haven't heard any updates since I last talked to Joe about this on May 25th, but at that point in time, they were hoping to have the new grantees announced by the end of June. So as far as I know, they're still on track for that date.
Generally, EPA will always announce later rather than sooner, so I expect it will probably be towards the end of this month. But But if it does go into July, it doesn't really mean much because that's basically what's happened every year. We have an annual job training conference in August, towards the end of August this year, and they like to make sure that the announcements are made so that people could attend the Brownfields workshop that we have in Alexandria.
Hi, did someone just join?
Okay. One of the things we were just discussing in the beginning of the call was the prospects of funding for the next year and where job training in Brownfields will stand. And, of course, we've heard a lot of horror stories so far. Nothing is certain. There's not any indications that directly from EPA that there's going to be big cuts. And interestingly enough, this program has increased from $200,000 to $300,000 per grant for 2 years. So it's been increased. There are things that are – someone joined? There's some things that are in the works in terms of trying to bring other media into it. Last year was the first year when EPA started to expand the scope, moving strictly from brownfields to other things like urban agriculture and clean water to try to expand the environmental training program from just strictly a brownfields training program. So there's two things going on. We've got the potential for cuts due to Congress cutting EPA. But then we also have, on the opposite side of that, a big push by the administration to create jobs, push from mayors to keep this program going, and also within EPA, there's been a lot of emphasis on the job training program. So while it's hard to tell, I think we need to just play this out. The other thing that's working for the job training program is it's small. Linda Gazinski, a long time ago, and very wisely tried to keep this program small. And the reason was that these smaller programs aren't as big a target as the larger ones. So we're really talking about a $3 million budget, which isn't a whole lot by federal standards. So I think the way we're approaching this is we're going to keep going, and we'll see what happens. As we get towards November, our anticipation is that there will be another RFP announcement in November, and with again a spring due date, and the cycle will continue. So we're going to go from there. It kind of leads us into these funding sources and how we start our program, and then how we fund it to keep it going, and then how we sustain it. So there's actually three components. There's the startup, the implementation, and the sustained funding of the program. And EPA helps with the startup and with the implementation. EPA doesn't necessarily help with the sustaining of it. The job training program was originally designed to get programs started, not necessarily to keep them going. Having said that, we have some programs that have been funded and have been going for over 10 years, and they do get re-upped. There are provisions that if you get a grant in 1 year, you can't apply for another year, but they do manage to fund good programs and continue to fund them. We also had programs that have received funding, and George was on last week. His program received funding early on several times and then did not receive funding but was able to sustain themselves with state funds and have tremendous leverage in the state funds. So we have a mix of programs. In every case, the ideal situation is to get a job training program and then latch on to a larger program that will keep you going. And we find that tends to be the model that works best. It's the model that you find a program in your community that's either ongoing now, something like a youth build or a young community developers program that's going, may be receiving Department of Labor funding, may be receiving state funding, like the New Jersey Youth Corps, for example, receiving state funding, some federal funding. And then adding on the environmental component onto that existing program. And where that helps is this whole issue of starting up a job training program from scratch is very expensive, time intensive, and labor intensive. You, of course, have to form your corporation. If you were to start from scratch, you've got to form your corporation. Before you could apply for an EPA grant, you'd have to apply for federal nonprofit status, and that takes about 4 months. So it takes about 6 months if you're starting up from scratch. It would take about 6 months just to get yourself in a position where you're a nonprofit and you're able to apply for federal grants and many state grants that require nonprofit status. In addition, the federal application cost for setting up a nonprofit is about $850 now. So there's time and expense involved in setting up from scratch. And of course, if you don't have other funding, this is all coming out of pocket. So it could be very expensive. There are alternatives to startup. One that's been used is to find a fiscal agent who is a nonprofit, so that you could have your organization, which might be an environmental job training program, but you're using and operating under a fiscal agent who's a well-established nonprofit in your state or in your community. They've got the advantage of having established their nonprofit status. They have their administrative their bookkeeping set up. So you're not starting from zero. You're starting from a starting point. There have been situations where you may link with an existing nonprofit that's a fiscal agent, and you work with them for a while, and then during that period of time, depending on your program and how you're able to attract funding and support your program, you might then concurrently apply for another nonprofit of your own and start up that in parallel, and then at some point you may decide to branch off, or you may decide to just integrate into the existing nonprofit that you joined. So there's a lot of strategies on this whole issue of startup. For most of us, it's not an issue if we're part of a community college or we're part of a governmental organization, or we might be a part of an existing nonprofit. All of those things are taken care of. You've got your bookkeeping in place. You've got your fiscal agent. You know how to work with government contracts. You've been audited. You know how to handle audits. You have every year your books are certified and audited. So you really alleviate a lot of problems. Is there anyone out there that is starting from scratch at all? That's on the call? Okay. It's really a difficult thing, but it's not that it can't be done. It's just it makes a lot more sense to link into an existing nonprofit organization. So once we get the idea of starting this program, some sort of an environmental job training program, the next step is how do we start accumulating funds? And I look at it as a kind of a little collection pot, the model that I would like to look at of putting funds into that pot from various sources. And you start looking at where can I start to get operating funds from all kinds of multiple sources. And we're not just talking about cash, but we're also talking about other resources. These resources might include facilities. Free facilities are key. You might get training space. Another one might be equipment. Someone may provide you with the equipment, and that might go along with the facilities. You may get in kind in terms of personnel, gathering people who could teach courses, who do instructional staff, who might provide administrative assistance. Many large corporations, in fact, will provide people 20 hours a week of working for nonprofit. And you might get someone in our community. There's organizations like IBM that allow their employees to work with nonprofits for 20 hours a week, and they pay them. And it would be their contribution to the community, and these might be in-kind. All of these in-kind contributions, facilities, labor, and, of course, dollars go into this one pot. And, of course, this is your these are your funding sources. And, of course, it's fine to have all the free space and all the in-kind help and all the equipment, but you still need dollars to operate. And this is where the funding sources come in. And we have to start looking at where are there dollars and where can we get cash to pay salary and those items that we can't get in-kind. And we don't want to short shrift in-kind. Leveraged funding is a tremendous resource. Many of our programs have more leveraged resources than they do dollars coming from the grant. Everything from facilities to assistance come in the form of leverage in-kind contributions. When we start looking at dollar funding, now we start talking about grants. And the issues on grants are, I look at that as almost like a pyramid. The most difficult grants to get, the ones that require the most paperwork, the most jumping through hoops, of course, and usually are the largest are the federal grants. Of course, the ones that emanate from headquarters, and then there's those in particular EPA, some come from regional offices. As we go down the food chain, federal to regional to state to county to local, the grant funding gets easier. It becomes less competitive. It has less strings attached, and you've got more interaction and closer interaction with your funding sources. And in some sense, in sometimes, your relationships last a lot longer and they're more stable. Many of the federal grants are one-shot deals. They're large grants. When they're over, they're over. The problems with them is they're subject to what we're seeing now is large cuts. Of course, your state and local, they have the same issues. They are often designed as startup, and they're not really designed as sustaining grants. Now, there are some agencies like Department of Labor that have more ongoing grants. National Science Foundation also has grants that tend to last longer periods of time. EPA tends to have very short grants and more in the terms of startup. But the federal grants are something you work up to. A good place to start is from the local level. And on the local level, depending on what city you're in, you're best to work with your city government in your mayor's office. Now, if you look at the flow of CBDG funds or federal funds that are block grants to states, they go to states, they go to communities, there are lots of funds that go trickle down to the city. And, of course, if you're going to go after city or state funds, you're going to have to stand in line and be there with everyone else. But the fact that we're doing job training and we're providing jobs may push you towards the front of the line. And the first place I would look for funding if I were getting a program started or even sustaining it, I would definitely get into the mayor's office and look at local funding. Not only does it give you visibility into what monies might be available locally for funding your program, but it also will give you insight into who else might be doing what you're doing or doing what's similar to what you're doing, or allow you to partner with other people who have been receiving and will continue to receive funding. You may find that there's another organization in your city that has a job training program but does not do environmental training, and you could partner with them, and it would make them a stronger program, and it would get you started. And down the road, I'm going to be leading towards the EPA funding, but if we start locally, let's pretend EPA funding doesn't even exist. Let's pretend we want to start a program without any federal funding. We start locally, and we see if there's an existing program that we could link into. If not, we see what funds might be available on the local level. Now, there's certainly the city government, but there's also foundations and there's also private sector funds. Right now, assets of private sector companies are at an all-time high, and there are monies available through foundations and through companies, particularly on the local level, where they are willing to provide funding, startup funding, or in-kind or leverage funding to organizations that are performing activities that they believe in. And if you're gearing your job training program to women, or say reentry of women or reentry of men from prison, or veterans or disabled veterans, you may find that there are private sector organizations that are going to be more than happy to associate themselves with your program and help you get started on a cash basis. You definitely have to look locally at those. And the nice thing about both foundation money and about private money is often there are not many strings attached. They'll visit your program, they like what you're doing, and they'll write you checks. And it's probably the least accountable money in terms of what you have to do to get it. And if they like what you're doing, it may even turn out to be the most sustainable money. It might be, there are towns that have founders of large corporations, and those founders believe in a certain principle or idea. And if you could get in and have them support your organization, you could become part of their giving plan, and they would write you in. And that's the ideal situation, because it gives you a base on which you can build and then go out for other funding. I wouldn't overlook the faith-based organizations that often are willing to support job training programs. They might tend to provide support more in the in-kind level, or in terms of recruitment and life skills and placement, not perhaps so much in terms of dollar funds, because they may not have the dollars to give, but they certainly have the linkage to the community, and they would certainly be interested in partnering with you. They may provide facilities also. So certainly faith-based organizations are a place to look. Also, local organized labor, again, depending on your community and the strength of the organized labor organizations, they may, again, want to partner with you maybe more on an in-kind basis than definitely on a financial basis. But there have been cases where organized labor has provided training facilities and trainers. So they may provide a partnership where they would provide you all your facilities. Now, you can get $100,000 to rent a facility, or you could get and get the $100,000 grant, or you could have the $100,000 facility granted to you and let you use their facility. There's really no difference. Goodwill, for example, might have a facility that they're not using that they might allow you to use as a training facility. Well, there's little difference between having a rent-free space that's worth $100,000 and having a $100,000 grant that you go to great lengths and compete for versus getting the facility to use. And this often happens with organized labor, with foundations, with corporate donors. So when you're first starting up, it really becomes a search activity, and we've been talking previously about needs assessment and how important that is. And this kind of ties in and segues into that whole needs assessment issue of finding out who in your community are the leaders and who are the ones that are interested in developing job training programs and connecting with those and seeing if they're interested in supporting the program. And then we're going to work up from there. The next step is to start looking at state government and seeing what types of programs they might have. They may have brownfields programs. They may even have a brownfield job incentive program. North Carolina for a while, several years ago, they did not have a job training program, but they had a brownfields incentive program. If you hired people, they would help support part of their salary. So there may be a state program. Certainly the Office of Economic Development in the state may have funding to support it. They may have funding coming from a block grant from the federal government that you need to look at. So the next step is, after you finish your looking at your state activities, you move on to the onto the state. Once you look at local activities, you look onto the state activities and see what might be available on the state level. And hopefully by this time, you have done two things. You've linked up with an existing organization that has had federal grants, and you've gotten some funding from local organizations, and perhaps you've gotten some incentives or some ideas from some state organizations. And at that point, you're ready to move on to the federal government. And the federal government is now the more difficult one, and I think what we may want to do is address that in the next session, because that's a whole nother realm. Anyone out there that has other experiences, any experiences with local funding or with state funding that has worked for them? No? Okay. Well, that is one of the things that it's the first step in making the program work, and it's the first step in going on to your federal program. So what we're going to do, I think, in the next session is we're going to start to talk about your federal funding and about all of the programs. It's a whole nother bag of worms. We're talking about each department. We're talking about the US EPA. We're going to be talking about Department of Labor. We'll be talking about HUD and Department of Education and all of the different programs that that they have and how we might go about applying for some of the federal grants. So, does anyone have any comments or anything to add regarding the startup or local funding options might be available to them?
No.
No? Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is in the notes for this week and next week, which will be 2 weeks from now, talk about some of the federal sources of funding and where we might move in terms of getting funding and to those organizations. It's one thing about the brownfield job training, environmental job training, is you constantly have to start looking at what leverage funds are out there and who you could link up with, and that's clear. One of the things we'll talk about is the Department of Labor, which is, seems to be the largest pool out there for both incumbent training and for new employees training, and we'll look at that in a little bit more detail. But what I'm going to do is kind of summarize just this whole area of looking locally, joining up with local organizations, trying to link into mayoral or city funds and moving into state funds, and then from there we'll move on to the federal fund. So,
and Mike, with the next meeting, we're going back to Wednesdays, is that right?
We're going to go back to Wednesdays, and it'll be 2 weeks from tomorrow, and we'll get back to our regular schedule, and we'll kind of quickly recap on this, and then we're going to move into the what funds are available right now for environmental job training programs on the federal level. We'll do that next time, okay? So between now and then, you guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay?
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Have a good day.